Life is made up of experiences. Experiences shape our perspectives and allow us to pass along knowledge. In this podcast, I sit down with listeners like you and find out that no matter who you are, everyone has a story to tell. I'm Ethan Smith, and this is Life Experienced. Education has the power to impact everyone. Here in the United States, children progress through primary and secondary education, hopefully gaining the skills they need to become productive adults by the time they graduate high school. Then, even more education opportunities open up. Trade schools, community colleges, and public and private universities all offer environments in which students may learn and master subjects in order to seek associated careers. Throughout these education experiences, many individuals have the chance to impact their students. Growing up in Turkey, Gunan Kuran recalls altering her career plans largely due to one of her teachers. Do you remember what you wanted to be when you grew up? Like when you were a kid? Like what kind of thing?
I think I'm still trying to figure that out.
Okay. Hey, that's okay.
I'm not grown up enough yet. Yeah. Well, it started to be an architect, actually, because my dad was an architect. So I watched him back in the days when you were using not computer, but actually the T's and all the colorful pencils and, you know, markers. And it was very intriguing because I like art and I thought that's a cool thing to do. And I really don't know how I changed from architecture to the chemical engineering. And actually, I think I disappointed my dad because he thought till the last minute I was going to be an architect and I came up with this chemical engineering thing. And I know how that got into my mind because of my chemistry teacher, even though chemistry, we know that chemistry and chemical engineer are not the same thing.
Right.
But I didn't know that. Back then, you know, when I was high school taking chemistry class and I was really good at it. And, you know, the teacher was very hard on everybody else. So I was getting the, you know, highest grade would be, you know, over 10, 7 and 8 were the highest grades. And I was the one getting it. So he thought I should be good at studying chemical engineering. So that's how I ended up being a chemical engineer.
Right.
But I still don't know what I want to be, you know, honestly. But if I knew better what I know now, I think I probably could have been an educator.
Gunan went on to complete a degree in chemical engineering and evaluated her options. Her soon-to-be husband, Erdogan, had already moved to the United States from Turkey, where he was faculty at the University of Maine. Gunan applied and was accepted to the graduate program at the same university and moved to the United States.
And at that time, I wasn't sure if my parents actually will let me go to U.S. for PhD, but I was going to just bring the catalogs and share with them and then, you know, apply. So that's how it started. And then I applied. I got actually accepted to the University of Maine, and I was in the PhD program for 4 years. And I did all the qualifiers, and I did all the coursework, but never finished my thesis to defend. So I was close, but back then, by that time, I had two kids and it was getting too difficult. And of course he was in the field already ahead of me. And in the University of Maine is very small college. There was no opportunity that we can both be hired as a faculty. And there wasn't much industry except paper mills, which I didn't want to be working on the paper mills, to be honest. I did my internship in the paper mills back in Turkey, but I really didn't want to work in the paper mills. So there was not a lot of option, and I really wanted to have a family. I really wanted to be with the kids. So I, you know, made a decision that this is too much pulling my hair and stressing out, and you know, we too much for both of us to be stressed out. So I, you know, he was very ahead of me in the field. So I said, you know, it's okay too. And I, you know, took a leave of absence with the thought that I can go back. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, the third child came in the picture. I got busier. And then by that time, actually, I got really into the education and the school system and what I can do in the schools with the kids. And then I guess, you know, as your time gets along, you're, you know, going behind in the chemical engineering field.
Right.
Of course, things change so much past 25 years. So the more you wait, it's harder to jump back in. Then I totally, you know, said that's not my thing anymore. So.
Okay. Given that the education systems differ across the world, Gunin became interested in learning more about the United States education system when her children began attending school. So you mentioned that you first got involved with education after you had children.
Yes.
So was that the motivation?
Yeah, well, when my son started kindergarten, that was 1994, I started, going into the, I was a room parent. So doing the parties and, cutting and pasting for the, or making a photocopy for the teacher and reading the kids and, going around and checking if they know how to hold the scissor, things like that. So it's a very basic skill helping, teacher. It started. And in fact, at that time I had, 2.5-year-old and a brand new baby. But what I was doing is I was actually getting a babysitter for the girls. So our oldest is a son. Mm-hmm. And then we have two daughters. Babysitter for the girls for a couple of hours so I can go and volunteer. And that was interesting thing to do because I was actually spending money to volunteer, but that was my time off. And also I feel, good about spending time with the teachers, helping and seeing, because I didn't grow up here. Mm-hmm. I wasn't really, I didn't know how the education system works here. So that was my opportunity to learn. So I actually learned a lot as the kids going from elementary to middle and high and the college, so it was fun to just go after them and, watch what's going on, learn a lot of U.S. history in the process and all the other things,
Gunin and her family would eventually move to Blacksburg, Virginia, where the school system was larger than in their community in Maine. As her children progress through elementary, middle, and high school, Gunin sees many opportunities to become more involved.
I imagine you continued to volunteer, and did you do anything else to get involved? And
The classroom volunteering or room parent thing got involved, and I ran book fairs to raise money for the PTAs, and then I got into parent teacher organizations and associations, and then as a volunteer, and then I started becoming taking positions in their boards. Like I became a secretary and I became a vice president, and ending up I was the president at one point. Actually, after we moved here, before that I was involved at the school system in Maine. It was very small because only there was one elementary, one middle, mm-hmm. and my high school. But I, there was a planning committee for full day kindergarten, so I was involved with that. There was a planning committee for a multi-age classroom setting, like first and second graders together kind of things. So I was involved with that. So I did a lot of, I like research, I like reading. Mm-hmm. So I was the one always doing that kind of stuff for those groups. Then after we came here, at that time, my youngest was a kindergarten age, and then oldest started the middle school. So I became involved, of course, the middle school PTAs, and then it became high school PTAs. But there was one and a half year, I was a president of all three PTAs. That was an interesting year.
Oh, wow.
So that was a little too much on the extreme. But that was, and then, of course, I was as a parent rep for principal hirings. And then all my kids did band, so I was actually band chaperone, marching band chaperone, organizing the uniforms and all that aspect.
While the education system in the United States has many flaws, it is ultimately designed to benefit those who progress through it and graduate. Throughout her involvement, Gunin recognized many ways that the school system served the students and parents, and so she took a step to become even more involved with the local education system. More on that right after this. Hey, Life Experience listeners, there's a great new way to listen to our show, and it pays. It's a new app called Podcoin, which you can download in the App Store or on Google Play. Simply subscribe and listen to your favorite shows like this one, and you'll start earning right away. There are rewards like Amazon or Starbucks gift cards, but you can also donate your earnings to charity. I use Podcoin to listen to all of my podcasts now, and it's been great. You can join me on PodCoin today. Just open the App Store or Google Play, download the PodCoin app, and use the invite code LIFEEXP when you sign up to get 300 free PodCoin to get you started. Give PodCoin a try today to start earning for the shows you already listen to. And don't forget to use invite code LIFEEXP when you sign up for a great bonus today. Welcome back. While there are some programs with federal oversight, the education system in the United States is largely controlled by state and local governments. State legislatures are the primary sources of funding and education standards, but other decisions are left to individual districts. Thus, the burden to maintain and support a robust education system often falls on locally elected officials. Just a few years ago, Gunan found herself seeking one of these positions.
That's when I decided to run the person. Of course, we have seven board members, seven districts. A friend of mine, Phyllis Albritton, was before me, and she said she's not going to run again, so that's 2013. So she took me out for lunch and twisted my arm that I can do. So that's how I got into the running for the school board. Yeah.
What was that process like? Do you remember it being particularly challenging?
You just have to collect 125, I believe. I should know that. I did it twice. approximately 200 signatures from your district.
Okay.
So it has to be all District A. They don't have to vote for you, but you have to just knock the doors and say, can you support me so I can be on the ballot? So you have to collect all those signatures and just from your, so they all have to be the residents of the District A. So that was the challenge, you know. So I did, well, luckily I had a lot of supporting friends that they thought, even though they weren't residing in my district, but they were willing to go collect signatures for me.
Yeah.
So with that, the first round around was a little intimidating, just learning the system. I remember spending time with the registrar's office to, you know, find out what I need to do or what I shouldn't do. You know, there are a lot of forms in terms of, you know, economic interests and this and that, whether you are campaigning, whether you are collecting money. See, I never wanted to collect money, so I never took any money from anybody. Of course, I was lucky nobody challenged me.
Oh, okay.
In both times, I didn't have a challenger.
Okay.
So if you have a challenger, I guess you have to play differently, obviously.
Yeah.
But I never see, and I still don't see, and people, you know, makes fun of me about that because I think this is not a political spot. I still believe we have to be bipartisan, even though obviously everybody has their political affiliation one way or the other. But I never saw this as a big running campaign and, you know, going after the party people, get some money and have be sponsored and things like this. I never see the whole thing that way. Even people said, oh, you're getting into the political arena. And I said, no. I'm just going to be in a school board.
Right.
Well, of course, you know, you learn. There is politics in everything in the grand scheme of things. But, I was lucky enough that I don't have to fight against anybody. So, but, of course, I was very excited. And I saw that everybody has to have yard signs and, like, stickers and pamphlets. So I spent my, you know, out of pocket my own money and got those things. So it was first excitement. So I have some, and in fact, my youngest daughter is an artist, and she designed my first yard sign my little pamphlets.
That's great.
So I reused them the next time around. So
in our interview, Gunan said she didn't have any large goals she wanted to accomplish when she originally ran for the school board. Hers was not a campaign for major change. She just wanted to ensure that the board was doing the best it could for the children in its districts. Gunan is now the chair of the school board in Montgomery County, Virginia, having served on the board since 2013. She is a strong supporter of fine arts and language programs in the school system and still makes her best effort to connect with students, parents, and teachers in order to perform her duties as best as possible. One of the most important and time-consuming aspects of her role on the school board involves proposing each year's budget. Gunan had a lot to say about what this process has been like recently, and while many of her remarks were specific to Montgomery County, I believe her remarks paint a picture of the constant challenges that are common in many districts across the United States.
one of the big picture things that the board is responsible for is putting forth the budget every year.
Yeah.
So what does that process look like, and what are your priorities every year when that
process
comes
around? That's
the
most stressful part, and not I'm fond of it, I should say. And seems like it comes around very quickly.
Right.
I feel like we're just dealing with budget all year round. Even though I think it comes around, I think September, October time frame, and then doesn't go away till basically May when we approve the budget. That's a tough one. It's getting a little better because the state finances and, of course, the county finances are doing much better than 2008, 2009, you know, downtime. But it is always we have more needs than, unfortunately, we have, you know, the money for. And I think the state funding is funky. That's the word I think I should use. Standard of quality that they put out there is so, I mean, that's supposed to be the minimum that school divisions should do. But I think it is so low that all the school division has to spend out of pocket over some twice. I mean, the percentage changes from, of course, division to division, and we have 132 school divisions. So, of course, my thinking was, if it's not even enough for any school division to survive, you know, what is the purpose of that then? You know, and that's something that I think General Assembly has to look into. And the standard quality is very funny because it doesn't cover all the personnel in a school system. So like your custodians, your aides, your bus drivers, even your assistant principals and guidance counselors, they're not covered for the money that is given for standard quality. I mean, that's the state, you know, that's what state gives. So a lot of, you know, out-of-pocket has to be locally, you know, spent. And, you know, in my initially, way before I got elected, I was thinking, you know, why the county, you know, doesn't give more. And then, you know, the more I learned, I realized that, I mean, county doesn't have that much extra revenue either. And obviously they have to run the other things, you know. So even though we are the big portion of their budget, so automatically we need to get the more portion of the revenue. And of course, the politics gets in the way too, and then the priorities gets in the way. But the needs are, you know, always there. Of course, since 2000, because of all the cuts and all the increase in the student population, we're, you know, still behind in terms of how many teachers we should have. So that's always a challenge. I mean, priority has been, and especially the past year, is the raises. And also fixing the scale so we can be compatible with the other surrounding districts, which was, you know, again, an eye-opener because Montgomery County is, you know, pretty well-to-do county in state standards with this local composite index, that funny formula that they have. Our ability to pay is pretty high, and I think we are in the 49 out of 132. So, it's, you know, the county is supposed to be able to pay. But then you're looking at the revenue base and say, like, it's not much money. You know, even if they give the everything, it's still not going to, you know, be enough for our needs. And the needs this year was, and then I realized that, you know, I mean, we find out that we are the lowest paid all surrounding counties, which, you know, is surprising, you know, because of the two colleges surrounding us, Radford and Virginia Tech, and, you know, relatively well-off county compared to most Southwest Virginia counties. And still we are not, you know, paying our teachers high enough. And, of course, with the teacher shortage, it becomes even more important to hire and not to lose those individuals. So this year definitely was the priority, be able to give the raise and also boost the beginner's salary scale. So, and also to be putting teachers back, you know, putting teachers back. And then this budget, we have 19, and last budget, I think we had 14. I think we're still behind, but it's much better than how it was, you know, when I got on the board. So the, you know, priorities, of course, the, you know, health insurance goes up, and we try to keep up with that. So not the, you know, we had situations in the past that we gave a little bit raise, but then all that little bit raise went to the health insurance because we had to, that should increase too. Mm-hmm. So ending up, teachers didn't really get any money extra.
Right. Right.
So try to get, I think this year health insurance not gonna have any effect on anybody. So that's a good thing. But then of course you have to buy buses, you have to maintain the buildings, and buses are 90K a piece. So, and we have a 100 bus fleet, so it's a lot of buses.
Right.
And you have to maintain at a certain number every year, so you don't have to buy 20 of them at once. Uh-huh. Or lose 20 of them at once.
Right.
Either way is
right.
Bad. So that's a challenge. Of course, maintenance is a challenge. And of course, Christiansburg area buildings and building capacity is a challenge. And the other communities had new schools built since 2000, except the Christiansburg community.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the county has, or the school system has a priority, in terms of which school has to come next. But, of course, in 2010, when the Blacksburg roof collapsed, that kind of changed things.
Right.
There was not any option, unfortunately. Of course, county's debt capacity gets in the picture.
Mm-hmm.
Since they borrow a lot in 2010. So, but we really realized that with the last conversation jointly with them, that there is a plan actually every year that they can borrow a little bit at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully we'll get those projects, going on. That's exciting, that moving forward, because we've been talking about what we're supposed to do in that area since, I think, 2015.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's like 4 years that nothing happened and a lot
right.
of talks happened. I mean, small things happened, like the Falling Branch expansion, but not major things. And, it's expensive. Elementary school, new elementary school, $40 million.
Right.
New high school, $100 million. It's not a small amount. So hopefully we're working together. That's the other thing that I'm trying hard. When I got on the board first time, I heard and sensed that there are so many tension between, of course, having four communities. Everybody says like Blacksburg against the rest of the county, or vice versa, or Christiansburg against Blacksburg. And then the supervisors against the board, school board members. My thing is, let's, work together.
Mm-hmm.
We are under your umbrella. You're our government. We can't tax anybody. So
right.
we really depend on what you're going to allocate us.
Mm-hmm.
So let's work together and then, agree on at least the needs, a little bit, so how we can move forward. So hopefully I'm just to put a little dent on the positive direction.
Yeah.
So I think we're getting along, most part,
That's good.
So that's a good thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes.
Gunin has clearly enjoyed her time as school board chairwoman, even amid tense budget negotiations. She says her plan for re-election isn't set in stone right now, but she did issue a challenge to anyone who would consider serving in a school board role.
What advice would you give to someone who wants to get involved with their local education system?
I will highly recommend. It's an investment for the future, and I think we need young people. I know it's time consuming, and I know when you're dealing with, job hassle, family hassle, with the kids and both baby, everybody's working in the family. But still, I think it is doable. Again, it is, how much you invest time-wise, it's really in your hands. And I think you still can be effective school board member, even if you don't have to spend your 24 hours like I do. but it is doable. You don't have mm-hmm. to be, retired or, that all the time's in your hand. And I think when your kid's going through, I thought about this because probably I could have run for school board earlier when
mm-hmm.
my kids were in school still. My thought process then that if I don't have any kids in the school, I'll be more objective.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that is, as long as you are aware that you're not coming particularly with one agenda, that you're going to fix the guidance counselor of your, child's school kind of an agenda.
Right.
You'll be effective board members because you will know mm-hmm. what is going on. I mean, it will be day-to-day fresh
right.
since your kids will be in school. So, and I think we need young minds. And also we need, I think, the educators, too. That's the other thing I find out throughout my conference attendings and talking to other board members. A lot of retired teachers, a lot of retired principals, a lot of retired superintendents are board members. And that's also a very good perspective that I think we are missing on our board. We really don't have anybody with the education background. Well, we really don't. And I think that's an important point to, I mean, of course, you don't have to be a retired teacher to run for school board. I mean, what I'm trying to say is, like, we need educators on the school board, too. I think it makes a difference, as well as the parents of the current parents.
Sure.
Yeah, I think everybody is a little scared how much time it needs, but I think it can be manageable. So I highly recommend everybody. It's a very learning experience, and I think, and also if you keep it... the perspective is all for kids, you know, that we have to remember. That's why we're what we are doing.
Yeah.
And it's a good cause and the future. I mean, you know, otherwise those people are going to decide on your future if mm-hmm. they don't know what they're doing. And that's not a good thing.
Yeah.
I'll try to leave the future a little better hands, you know, hopefully.
That's good. Gunan remarked that one of her favorite things she gets to do as a board member is to educate the public about public education. I hope that my conversation with her has sparked your interest in the local education process. I encourage you to reach out to your local school officials for more information, attend board meetings and school hearings, subscribe to your local newspaper to stay up to date on budget discussions. There are many ways to get involved, and I really hope you will, because the future of education affects us all. Life Experienced is hosted and produced by Ethan D. Smith and is primarily distributed via Anchor.fm. The show is also available via DSound, a decentralized audio sharing platform built on the Steam blockchain. For more information, visit DSound.audio. The music in this podcast is composed by Lee Rosevere and is used under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 license. For more information, visit freemusicarchive.org. If you like the show, be sure to share it with others. Links to learn more about this episode, as well as more information on the podcast itself, may be found by visiting lifeexperienced.org. And for those of you still listening, my wife is an elementary school teacher, so when she found out I was doing this interview, she had a question she wanted me to ask. Well, last night I reminded Sarah that I was interviewing you today, and she wanted me to ask you if you have a favorite children's book.
Oh, that will be tough because we have too many books. After we moved to the area, to Blacksburg in 2000, I think for the following 3-4 years, every weekend we were in Lowe's buying bookcases.
Oh, wow.
So we have a lot of bookcases. Yeah. And in fact, I think my husband challenged his graduate students in terms of guessing how many bookcases we have. And nobody got close to the number till they came over and counted each and everyone.
Right.
So, of course, all those bookcases, part of it is all the chemical engineering stuff, but probably more than half of it children books.
Wow.
So I definitely have a lot of favorites. I'm really fond. Of course, depends on, you know, the age group, you know. I'm really Eric Carle fan, all the Eric Carle books I collected, and Jan Brett. Fan. I love her art because of the art interest of mine. She has very fine art in books. We had all, of course, the Red Wolf series and Harry Potter as you get older with the children.
Yeah.
of course, the Beverly Cleary ones, Ramona and, you know, Fudge. Those books were amazing. I don't know. It will be really hard to point. But I think in terms of the simplicity and color, probably us. Of course, Dr. Seuss books are cool too. But I think I will stick to the Eric Carle. We my favorite author yeah. in the books.
I think she will be satisfied with that answer. Okay. She'll be satisfied with that
good,
answer.
Good. I'm glad.